Hi, this is Chris from Crossroads Paranormal Radio. Tune in to Mike and I every Sunday night at 10 Eastern, live on Blog Talk Radio. Join us at www.cprshow.com as we discuss various paranormal topics and interview members of the paranormal community. Crossroads Paranormal Radio, breathing life into the paranormal community.
at Beth is to the theater world what King Tut's tomb is to archaeologists. The superstition follows that any company performing the play will be beset with horrible luck, ranging anywhere from uncanny accidents on the set to actual deaths within the company. 13 Omens Podcast is available at myspace.com/13_omens. Look for the link in the About Me section.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
All right, you know what?
If this is your first time, Bonnie just brought this up.
What's
if
that?
If this is your first time listening to Ghostly Talk,
I hope right. You are not disappointed.
You won't be disappointed.
You're not going to be disappointed.
Well, you're not going to be. I'm talking about with us.
Yeah, because you might be disappointed in us because.
Well,
we,
I am weekly.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, you
but
are.
But because we're going to see. We wrote a bio. We have a little bio.
Yeah,
here
we have this. We're like organized and like we're
it,
all. Like,
it's all on our sheets. We're all good to go. But you know what? We want to get right to it.
Yeah, I'm not
we're skipping.
Around.
We know that 99.9% of our listeners, because we only had one new one this week that I know of. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only making that up. Already know
1,
about
1,000,
Bill now.
Yes.
And I told Bill just before we got on here that when we go do speaking engagements, even
when we talk to people, when we're out there mixing it up, when we're out there being Metro, you know, it's like we talk to people all the time, and people always ask, like, you know, so, you know,
who's your favorite guest?
Who's your favorite guest?
And we never want to answer. We never want to say, you know, well, you know, we talked to, and we don't want to say, you know, the. You know, we don't want to point out that anybody is like spectacularly different or better or worse than any others. So what we do is we say the most fascinating guest we've ever had,
mm-hmm.
and I think and it's in our archives. If you go in the archives and
it's
look at those
photos,
it's
probably in the archives several times.
It's several times. Our speaking engagements, we've been asked the question, "Who's your favorite guest?" And we say, "Well, we don't want to say favorite, you know, play favorites, but we do want to say one of the most fascinating guests we've ever had, and we do say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the archives. Is Bill Nell.
Mm-hmm.
So we've invited him back on the show, and he's back. And
he's waiting.
Fortunately,
right
he agreed to
fortunately,
come back.
Fortunately, he agreed
yeah,
to
he
come
did,
back.
He did.
This is a treat and an honor for us to welcome Bill Nell back to the show. His websites, www.ufoguy.com and www.canyoustandthetruth.com. Bill Nell, you've been busy since we last talked.
I really have, and a lot of it's due to you. I want to thank all the people that email me on a regular basis that listen to your show and hear my discussions with you on the archives. And you know what? They've sent some really compelling questions. You know, that's what I like about your show, because I get these, you know, kind of questions that I really got to put on my thinking cap for, and I like that. You know, it's like, you know, some people will email me and say, oh, man, what do you think ghosts are? You know? But, you know, your guys are like, well, remember that time when the Warrens were involved with the Amityville Horror case? I'm like, yes. And I love that because, you know, it gives me a chance to go back and really look up stuff. And, of course, you know, anytime somebody does that, it actually inspires me to write articles. So sometimes I have a couple of articles that I've added lately were directly inspired by your listeners who emailed me, because this stuff, you know, I've been doing this since I was 13 years old. And actually, when I was in high school, I was about 15 when I started my UFO club in high school and started investigating all kinds of paranormal things. So, you know, I'm 50 years old now, so I've been doing this forever, you know, from my standpoint.
Yeah.
So consequently, I've got so much stuff that, you know, it's just a matter of eventually writing it down, you know.
go
ahead, Doug.
One of the required, and we talk about this more often than I can even remember or count. One of the things that you had on, I don't know, I don't even know if it's still there on your site, because the websites have changed and, you know, the names have changed and things, because you were on CJB.net and things like that
one time. Yeah.
One of the things you do is you put out this DVD series that changed our lives.
Well, is it on DVD yet, Bill?
Yes. Well, I now have switched everything that I had to DVDs because, you know, obviously you know, VHS is pretty much gone. Not to say it's gone, but I just, you know, for me, it's a whole lot easier to send out DVDs. So all the videos that I had on VHS are now available on DVD, and there's some new ones, too.
And I have to say, well, I hold them.
Yeah,
I'm going to your website tonight.
Going to your talk.
Here's the thing. Changed our lives. We talk about this nonstop whenever anybody will sit there long enough to listen to us. Especially the ones with Preston Nichols,
Duncan Cameron,
and Al Bielek. The
Philadelphia experiment.
The Philadelphia, which is what we talked with you before on the show, right? The Philadelphia experiment, Montauk, the whole thing. And these things really changed our outlook on a lot of things because we're not very conspiracy oriented. Although I have to say, there's compelling evidence in that DVD series, or well, at the time VHS series, now DVD series. There's these things have changed our lives, so they're still available for folks. I have called this series, right? I've called it required watching.
Even if, you know, in terms of the paranormal, okay, because the Philadelphia experiment and the Montauk Project really crossed the barriers. You know, it's not just about UFOs. In fact, a lot of it is not about UFOs. A lot of it involves psychic powers and the development of psychic powers and how they could be used for the U.S. government, you know, in terms of mind control, remote viewing, things like this, and even, of course, you know, unfortunately, psychic warfare, you know. And one of the things that I found so interesting was, you know, when I first met these guys, I mean, I thought they were absolutely insane. Because I thought, well, you know, I mean, I've heard the stories. I'm pretty sure that I heard my first personal Philadelphia experiment story when I was about 17. A girlfriend of my best friend's dad was a retired Navy officer, and he just scared the daylights out of me by telling me about his experiences at the Philadelphia Navy shipyard there in the 1940s. I believe he was there in 1942, and he told me how, like, one day one of his friends just vanished, and, you know, he was one of the test crew, they called him, that was on the ship. And for those who don't know, of course, the Philadelphia experiment basically was supposed to be a way that the U.S. government was going to create radar invisibility for battleships and for, you know, ships in the Navy. And, of course, a lot of people were involved. And, I mean, Einstein was probably the key figure.
Oh, yeah.
And there was Dr. Van Neumann. There was all these different people.
Nikola
and
Tesla,
actually,
that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, Nikola Tesla was the big one because he really – see, it was his alternative energy, alternative use of energy that really made it possible. But the thing was, you know, it seems like from day one, the physicists that were working out of Princeton in New Jersey had another plan. You know, yeah, they were going to do that. But they had this long-standing theory, which they, you know, were just begging to try. They felt they could literally make a ship invisible. And unfortunately, during the first several tries, first it was just with animals in cages, and then later it was with people. But it was pretty much the same effect. You know, the people and animals melted into the deck. You know, this was not a good thing. There was no way to control the technology because we lacked the supercomputers necessary. Now, of course, when we refer to Montauk, we're talking about an old base called Camp Hero on the eastern edge of Long Island, which is Montauk Point. Everybody knows the famous lighthouse, and if you've ever seen, every summer they get a bunch of somebody catches a couple of great white sharks out there, so it usually makes the news one place or another.
Yeah.
But at any rate, yeah, there's a base there, and basically during the beginning in the 70s, they made a serious effort to move a lot of the base underground, and by the time the 80s came along, they had a full-blown program going there, which involved mind control, time travel, and invisibility. And, I mean, they've done some pretty outrageous stuff. Now, just so people understand, I'm pretty much along the lines of a nuts and bolts investigator, even when it comes to ghosts, you know. Orbs are great, you know. I love orb pictures. I've got a whole collection of them. You know, sounds, EVPs, love those too. But you know what? I like full operation sightings, okay? That's what I really want.
Man,
I don't want to hear about your orbs. You don't want to hear about your full operation. I mean, you know, it's just the way I am. So when these guys came along, I did the smart thing, okay? Maybe it wasn't so smart. I got my wife mad at me. I went out on Thanksgiving Day, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Thanksgiving Day. So I made a real friend of the family that day by vanishing for the whole day. And I went out to this Preston Nichols house. He lived out in Long Island, not far from Montauk. And basically, I brought with me a good friend who had written technical manuals for the first space shuttle, which was called the Enterprise.
Yeah,
and this was a, you know, he was pretty connected. I mean, this is a guy who was a technical writer who worked for the, you know, worked for contractors that did government work, you know, basically all his life. And I said to him, I said, look, you know, I need your help. You got to tell me if these guys are crazy, you know, if this is a bunch of nonsense or if it's the real thing. And by the time they got done, and we were there for a good 7-8 hours, I filmed probably about five of that, of those hours, and on the ended up with about 5 hours on the reel, you know, which I have on the video series. But at any rate, in the end, my friend was shocked. I mean, he asked, and the questions he asked, he told me, he said, you know what scares me the most? These guys gave me cohesive answers. We were really freaking out. He didn't sleep for 3 days after this. I mean, he kept calling me up, like, you know, calling me. Bill, you know, did this really happen? Did I dream it? Cause, I mean, he was like, here I am being forced to work with technology that is like, you know, stuff you can get from Radio Shack, right? And you know, in reality, the government's got all this good stuff that I don't have access to. So from his standpoint, it was just a matter of why am I not allowed access? You know, my father was an Air Force general. He's, you know, retired years and years ago. And actually, he retired when I was still a little kid. But, you know, he used to tell me, he said, you know, the government tends to have technology that's about anywhere from 50 to 100 years ahead of what you're using in your house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the longest time as a kid, I kind of thought he was just pulling my leg. But he wasn't. I see that now. And, of course, with the Philadelphia Experiment, some of the stuff they do. You know, I'll tell you, I went to a convention once with Preston because I basically introduced Preston and Al and Preston Nichols and Al Bielek and everyone to the public. And I asked him to go to this convention with me, which was a psychotronics convention, really interesting stuff, you know, alternative machines and things. Engineering. A lot of engineers go there. So in the end, he put on a pretty cool demonstration. He used a Delta T generator, which is part of what the Philadelphia Experiment technology makes it work. And he actually was able to, everyone that was there, to implant in their minds an image. And I mean, to a person. He asked everyone to write down on a piece of paper the image he was using the technology to implant in their brain. They all wrote down the same thing. It was a photograph. And they all wrote down exactly the same thing. And, that, you know, it's that kind of demonstration that just goes to show you that not only is this stuff real, but it works.
Well, the thing with, I mean, and there's something, I know we're going to have a few questions for you, especially later on here, in regards to this, in regards to the whole Philadelphia Experiment. First of all, you know, Doug got to go on his rant for a minute about how much we love you, right? I got to tell you this. We're not done with this. It was just, no, it's funny because it's really funny. This is like about a week and a half ago. My best friend in the whole world, I met him at a watering hole, let's say, to meet his new girlfriend, right? And, you know, whenever we meet somebody new, what always happens, you know, especially my buddy Pete, he's like, this guy does a paranormal talk show. He's really whacked out. Check him out, right? So he mentions this to his better half, and she's like, wow, you know, ghosts and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, you know. And she's like, well, you know, and of course, here it comes. Well, what's the most interesting thing you ever had on there? I'm like, Philadelphia Experiment. Definitely. So what happens, Bill? Now, this is you're responsible for this, Bill. You're responsible.
Okay.
Because your tapes you sent to us, right, all the reading material that we've been through, I've been through just countless, just piles of papers and books and stuff. You're responsible for this because I spent the next hour and a half telling this girl with as much detail as I can muster in this gray matter between my ears, right, the story of the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, I could tell she was starting to glaze over towards the end a little bit, but, I mean, she just sat there like, no way, no. Nobody manifested a giant 30-foot, you know, Bigfoot-like creature to destroy buildings. It just, no, that stuff can't happen. But I got her thinking, though. You know what I mean? And that's what it's done for us, too, I think. That's the reason I think we're so dramatic about this, because we're like, the stuff that was on those tapes that we watched, I mean, just the stuff with Phil Schneider, for example, totally blew me away. Totally blew me away. I'd like maybe get to elaborate. You never met Phil Schneider, did you, Bill?
I met him one time. I did not know him as far as, you know, any kind of long-term friendship rating, but I was doing a seminar in Denver, Colorado, and this goes back to the late 90s. I can't remember which year right offhand, but at any rate, he was speaking there, and I was intrigued. I mean, I really enjoyed, I'd heard about him, and I really enjoyed his seminar, and I met him afterward, and I told him who he was, and he knew who I was from Preston and Al, mm-hmm. who he'd known for years, and we had a nice long conversation, and boy, you know, it wasn't long after that that he was killed. And, you know, one of the things that really freaked me out about this guy, and by the way, let me tell you, this is not the first person I've met who this has happened to, but...
Well, you said a second ago, I don't mean to cut you off, Bill, but I want to make a point of this. You said that he was killed. Now,
yes. The
powers that be said that he committed suicide, but you said that he was killed.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, for him to have killed himself, he would have had to strangle himself with a piano wire without hanging himself.
Exactly.
So, and bear in mind, he had a left arm that was virtually useless. He could hardly lift it. What? So in terms of doing any damage to himself...
Was it piano wire or a copper tube?
I thought it was piano wire or tubing or something like that.
Well, according to the final... I've spoken to his wife on a number of occasions, his ex-wife, mm-hmm. and she had told me that the first thing that she was told was piano wire, and that it was only later that they changed it. But according to her, and I tend to believe her because, again, you know, they weren't married at the time. They'd had a, you know, stormy marriage. And, of course, when you come from that background where you just, you know, the government just plays with your mind, who knows what happens. But she was always very sympathetic, you know, toward him because she understood what he had been through, you know.
Yeah.
And she basically told me that. She said, you know, as far as she was concerned, the man was killed. And I've looked over the autopsy report. I've looked over the coroner's report.
So,
I mean, anything I could put my hands on. And, you know, to me, and again, I'm, you know, a novice when it comes to that. But it was pretty obvious. You know, the guy was almost completely, I want to say, debilitated by the time this happened. I mean, one of his legs had given out, so he was in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
His left arm was not in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when he went out on the road, he really had to rest up for it. And, you know, really had to get himself in shape for that. It was not an easy thing because he had been shot several times before. I mean, when I met him, he showed me four different bullet holes that were in him. And having seen those before, what bullet holes look like, I knew that this was definitely the fact, you know. And I've seen it. I had a good friend named Bill English who was a very interesting guy. He was in the Air Force at one time, and he had actually seen Project Blue Book Report 13, which is a secret report. It's a report that was never released to the public. And when I started talking to him, I knew instantly that he was for real because I've been around Air Force people all my life, you know, because of my dad. So I could tell, and I knew what he was talking about. And he had been shot several times as well once he started talking about this. So, you know, this is not an uncommon occurrence. Who's doing it? Well, who knows, you know. It's hard to point the finger, but I'm convinced that Phil wasn't that killed. And, of course, you know, see, his problem was he was kind of like grandfathered in because his dad, and this is how he got started in it, was actually the ship's physician on the test crew for the Philadelphia experiment. And that's mm-hmm. how we got on that whole thing, and that's how he got involved with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brilliant man. I mean, he was a geologist.
A master geologist, yeah. He was like way up there as far as
geology. And he had a very high clearance with the government. So, you know, that's one of the problems. When you start talking, you know, you have to be careful because you never know who's listening. And, of course, what he was talking about, you know, goes to the very heart of the cover-up, you know, alleged agreements between the U.S. government and aliens and so on. And
he said he met an alien. He met
an alien.
So, well, you know, I'll tell you something. Now, that sounds
that
sounds really crazy to most people, okay? But I'll tell you something. If you've been in certain places at certain times and been in the government, it's not impossible. I'll give you another example of that. In fact, I knew a gentleman for about 20 years before he died. His name was Dr. Michael Wolff, and some people thought he was the most insane person in the world. But this was a guy who was so well connected with the government. I can tell you, I can't say who it is, but I can say that I have a witness. My friend, my best friend in the world, Dick Criswell, who's a wonderful, wonderful UFO and paranormal investigator himself, doing it about as long as I have, both sat on the phone and heard some very interesting things from Dr. Wolff. And some of the people we talked to were people that if I mentioned their name in the government, you would know them instantly. It would be instant recognition. So he had connections, and he had claimed to have met, you know, more than one ET at different times because he was a scientist. His job was to try to make extraterrestrial technology work for humans.
Backwards engineering, yeah.
Yeah. So in fact, people go to my website. I have a really good article that I recently wrote on him. It took me 5 years to even write a simple article because the guy's such a complex man. I didn't even know how to describe him to people. I mean, he's that kind of a person. But you see, those are the kind of people that the government needs, you know, super intelligent, kind of like multifaceted, multitasking people to work in that field because, you know, you never know what's going to happen and you have to be able to be on your feet. But, yeah, you know, so these things do happen. People do get killed, and they do meet aliens, and a lot of other strange things happen as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one thing I want to point out about Phil Schneider, and the reason I brought him up, because this was the most compelling piece of evidence, and this is on the tapes also that you sent us, your tapes that you were talking about.
And everybody needs to see these things.
But this is, I also did some more reading on this, and I'm gonna be as PC about this as I can. One thing that Phil's wife mentioned is that she saw the body. Saw the body after he, and I say this in quotes, committed suicide.
Quote.
All right.
End quote.
Now, one thing, and I'm just saying this for the audience. You can look this up if you want. Also,
Phil Schneider, on the internet.
It's on the internet. One thing, his wife came out of the viewing of the body and said, something is not right here. Well, what's going on? Well, I was married to this man, and married couples do things that I'm not going to mention here.
That we can't.
Well,
because
yeah,
we're on
okay.
The air, yeah.
But she said that, and Bill, step in here if I screw this up. But he actually developed a cancer or some type of cancer in, his lower region, let's say. Okay,
that
that's correct.
Area.
Okay, he developed a cancer, and they literally had to like. Opening them up and cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously trauma of that sort to any body part is going to leave a noticeable scar on the area. When his wife went to check this out, went to view the body, his body, from what she said, there was no scar there anymore.
Right.
I'm sure she saw it a couple of times. I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm trying to be serious. She saw it, but she knew what was going on there, right? And she said that there was no scar there. What's going on? That was something that I just was like, whoa. Now something's up right here. Something's going on here. Whose body was that sitting on the table that she was looking at, for God's sake? I mean, that rose so many questions in my head. And the story of Phil Schneider, I mean, it just the whole story just totally grabbed me. And I'm still doing research today on this gentleman. I mean, I'd like to find out more about him, possibly.
Well, one of the things he said to me that really blew my mind when I first met him in Denver, you know, we sat down, and I wanted to talk to him for a while. We had a nice lunch. Al was there, Al Bielik, and he also joined us. And one of the first things he said to me, which really blew me away, was, have we met before? And I'm like, no, not, you know, to my knowledge. And, you know, I thought about it later because I know how the Philadelphia Experiment works. And I know that they've been consistently not satisfied with leaving things as they are. Now, in that sense, I mean the future or the past, because one of the things that the Philadelphia Experiment technology was able to do was allow people to travel into the future to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know how he feels because I think I told the story last time I was on your show, but I grew up on Long Island in New York, and, you know, I had a former government scientist living across the street from me. And these were people that were, you know, they were an older couple, and they'd never had any kids. So, you know, they weren't particularly fond of children. So if children, you know, played in front of the house, they tend to come out and yell at them real good, you know. So basically, you know, everybody knew who they were. And one of the things that happened that was really strange was long after I moved and everything, I still had pictures of their house and, you know, myself and my dad playing, and, you know, we used to play baseball on the street and stuff, so my mom would take pictures, and, you know, the whole neighborhood got along pretty well. So anyway, the bottom line is, you know, there's a picture of their house and occasional pictures of them, but you know what? No one in my neighborhood remembers them.
Oh,
and they don't
remember
the house being there. And today, I hate to tell you this, but today the house is not there. Now, you know, I could explain that, you know, I mean, I could make all kinds of excuses and say this and that, but you know what? The house is not there, okay? I mean, I don't know what to say about that, with something like that. But I find that I'm not the only one who's experienced this, you know? it's almost like the movie Deja Vu, which just came out, you know? It's a similar scenario. And one of the last things that Preston and Al said on that tape that you mentioned, which really I think people should listen to that last part, is that they believe they contain the future and will continue to try until they get it right. And that's just as scary as anything.
Mm-hmm. And that is very scary, very, very scary.
And so, you know, the question arises, you know, was it Phil's body or was it Phil's body after something was changed? I mean, you know what, Dr. Wolf, talk about him. He also had cancer. And it's funny because when I would go over to see him, and he had, and this is, Dick was responsible for this, he had a piece of metal, very, very tiny, I mean, almost minute, that was from a crashed UFO, and he would soak it in water, and he would drink the water from it. And actually, when he did that, his cancer would go into remission. I mean, it was, and then one day, the material was just gone. It wasn't there anymore, And within a year, he was gone. He died. So, you know, again, like, how do you explain something like that? You know what I mean? You know, these are not ethereal things. These are not stories that people make up. These are physical things, you know, to me, as a investigator, things that could be traced down. I mean, you know, and I'm not really sure how many ways to Sunday you can explain something like this in normal terms. So, yeah, you know what? When it comes to the Philadelphia Experiment and the Montauk Project, you know, I've become a believer because of so many years, not just hearing it from these guys, but like I said, so many different sources, you know. And we have to remember that, you know, this was a crew that was affected, severely affected, and, you know, as far as I know, there's a possibility that some of them are still floating around. I mean, I told you guys, I think I told you guys the last time I was on about this incident that happened in Virginia a few years ago, in 2003, where people were basically renovating there. It was a couple. They bought a retirement house down in Maryland, you know, nice little retirement area. It's an older house, about 100 years old, and they got it for a really good price, really nice area. And they were renovating the whole house, and what they had to do was they had to get a bunch of stuff out of their attic, which was somebody's office at some point, and they had to move it all out. So they got their next-door neighbors or friends or somebody to help them. So there was four people in there, two couples. And while they were in there, this weird greenish glow filled the room. So next thing they know, this guy who looks like a sailor in a 1940s sailor suit comes through the wall and says to them, "Beware of 2005. Now, at the time, I didn't really think about it because, you know, I've heard a lot about 2005 from psychics and stuff over the years. Never really thought about, you know, much about it. But, you know, after the event happened, and then, of course, when 2005 came around, you know, there was a huge flood in New Orleans. And I was thinking, could that be what he was referring to? Because it was a very, very big event, and it certainly captured, you know, the attention of the entire world.
Oh, yeah.
So you never know. You know, stuff like this happens, and this came, by the way, from people, as it often does, that had no interest in the paranormal. I mean, you guys are ghost investigators, so I'm sure you run into people all the time that just have really never had any interest in this stuff till the ghost, you know, till they come across a ghost, you know.
Yeah.
Then they kind of like are stuck with it. Well, I'm not interested in it, but I got a ghost in the house. What am I going to do, right? So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's happened with me over the years, is that I've found people that really had no background or almost no knowledge at all, I mean, of the paranormal or UFOs or ghosts, that brought me information on the Philadelphia Experiment just because after I talked about it, or they heard me on a radio show or read something I wrote, then it dawned on them that it had to do with that. In fact, these people here didn't even know what was going on with it, and one of their friends had read one of my articles on my website about Philadelphia and told them about it, and they contacted me. I went over there and, you know, I've been there several times. It was just a complete freak out. It was frightening talking to the people because you realize that they had been through something very, very traumatic. And again, more evidence. You know, of course, I have an article about that too on the website. People can read it, but it's freaky. It really is.
And all these folks wanted to do was retire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but isn't that the way it always is?
It works out that way quite often. Oh, we bought a new house and we're going to raise our family and they're going to go to this wonderful school and all that stuff. And then, oh my gosh, now we're scared because we're living with a ghost.
I can't tell you how many times that's happened. I mean, I've investigated so many, almost every single ghost case I've ever investigated involved people that really had no interest or they were just trying to go about their lives. And because of something that happened or something that should have happened, there was a ghost, or there was poltergeist, or there was some sort of disturbance, as you were, a paranormal disturbance in the house. Absolutely.
I know a lot of people that have gotten into this field real hardcore as a result of an experiment.
Oh, Stephen LaChance.
Like, yeah, we're like reading each other's minds right now because he was one of them. I mean, he was just a working man, just doing his thing, taking care of his family, and he went through this horrendous, horrendous, horrendous experience. And now he works with MPR, Missouri Paranormal Research.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And he does a lot of work. He's always out there.
He's out there doing
a lot
work.
Of people get into this stuff as a result of something like that.
Have you ever, now your website, and we got to talk peripherally about UFOs and alien tech and stuff like that. Because we concentrate, when I first was introduced to you, Bill, it was through your work, through your articles.
That was like 100 years ago.
And what was being published on Paranormal News, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's writing about Montauk and the you know this incredible, you know, Philadelphia experiment and the whole thing and how it all relates, and that's what really, really tweaked my interest. But then your website is UFOguy.com. And I'm like,
well, you know, I called it that. I'll tell you why. I investigate all areas of the paranormal. But
yes.
I had been I mean, my goodness, from the time I was 16, I was doing radio shows totally by accident. I mean, in the high school I went to where I started the UFO club, I had a guy named George Mitchell, who was a longtime veteran Florida broadcaster. I mean, he'd done radio in the 40s. He'd done TV. He had a morning show that came on right before the Today Show. And, of course, in those days, Today Show was number one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it may still be. But in those days, it was big. There just wasn't any cable out there. So everybody started their day watching this man's show. And he actually had me on his show a couple of times. And as a result, I got calls from local radio stations. And I never thought about doing radio. It just didn't enter my mind. So, you know, I was a guest on their shows. And so I've been doing guest spots since then. But, you know, people always said, oh, I call you because you're the UFO guy. You know, he's like, this is our UFO guy. So consequently, I figured, you know, if for no other reason, for the sake of the listeners that know me by that name of all the different stations I've been on, that's why I chose that particular URL.
Excellent. And have you seen a UFO?
You know, I have. I've had a couple of sightings that were not spectacular and one that was. The one that I had that really blew my mind, I was, interestingly enough, I was coming back from a lecture at a library in Westchester County, New York. And for about 10 years or so, there had been sightings of a huge triangular-shaped object, which, of course, are seen as well today and have been seen all over the world. But this one tended to vanish and suddenly appear with a lot of lights around it. And I was just, you know, I'm driving down the highway, you know, and all of a sudden I see this blinking. Now the weather wasn't especially good, but see, that tended to be the best time to see this thing. For some reason, it tended to appear more when there was rain. And it was raining lightly, and there was a lot of clouds. And out of one of the clouds, I saw this bright, like, shining, flickering Christmas tree lights. And then all of a sudden, there was this huge triangle. When I say huge, I mean, you know, it was probably at least 1,500 feet up in the sky, and yet it was big. I mean, I would, you know, I hate using the old football field, you know, reference, but it was probably about a football field and a half. So it was huge. And I mean, I wasn't the only one pulling off the road. I had a camera with me. I wanted to get a picture of it, but it didn't stay long enough for me to do that. But I got to say, just as a person who's always wanted to see something like that, you know, I was thrilled. You know, I mean, you know, I get hot and cold on seeing stuff because, you know, there are days when I'll do an investigation, and this has happened to me on more than one occasion, where I will be so frightened by the time I'm done. You know, because I normally, which is not a good idea, by the way, never do these things by yourself, okay? But when I was younger, there just wasn't anyone, you know? Nobody wanted to be bothered. So a lot of times it was just me. And I'd go out to these people's homes and stuff and hear their stories, you know? And to be honest with you, I'd walk out, you know, dark at night, I'd be scared out of my wits. And so at times like that, I don't want to see something, you know. But then there's other times that I'm like, you know what, I'm missing out on this whole thing. So when I saw that, it was pretty cool. The other sighting I had was right near my house. I used to live in Queens, New York City, and I saw this big, round, circular object just sort of hovering. I got a lot of good videos of it, too. I have it on a couple of different videos that I have out. I have it on there. I was able to run upstairs. I always keep a video camera handy because, hey, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
I normally carry at least one or two cameras with me in my vehicle. So, you know, but I got to say, I got some pretty good video. And the thing that really freaked everyone out, I mean, by the time I got done, people knew me in that neighborhood. And I mean, one morning I had some guy from, there used to be a guy on television who worked for the local Fox affiliate in New York City. And his big thing was knocking on people's doors at 6 in the morning to interview them. And that's what he did with me. So my entire neighborhood became aware that I was somebody of, you know, of interest to the media when there were about 5 Fox News trucks out front and I refused to answer the door.
Oh, God.
So he's an Australian guy, he's about 8 foot tall. So finally I decided I better answer the door before he knocks down. I was just tired. I had just done a seminar till about 2 in the morning the night before. So I went down, I, you know, talked to him and invited him in and stuff. But the point is, it happened right there. So half the neighbors were out watching this thing with me. And then you hear on the tape, it was gone. I mean, it literally just vanished, like you often read about, you know, when you read UFO stories. And it freaked us all out. We're like, what happened? And I filmed some of the people. I asked them, could I have a reaction? You know, did you see that? Yeah, I saw it. I was, you know, right here. And, you know, they told me what happened, and they put it on video so that other people could watch it as well. And so I got their reactions. So that was pretty cool because, you know, when something like that happens, you really don't want to be by yourself because you're thinking, you know, no one's going to really believe me. So I was really glad to have a whole pile of people, probably about, I don't know, 20, 25 people around me when the thing finally vanished. And that was at 1 in the morning, you know, people were coming home from work as, you know, second shifts and stuff. So
we
all saw it. It's pretty awesome.
Man. Amazing. Because that's one thing that I haven't done yet. I really want to get out down to Gulf Breeze, Florida.
We've been trying to forever to do that.
To try and look for some UFOs.
Hey, UFO hunting.
Well, you guys are in Michigan, right?
Michigan.
Yeah.
You know what? I love coming to Michigan. I have done so many seminars there over the years, and it's always been a huge pleasure because I normally come in the summer when it's just absolutely beautiful, you know, and I enjoy the people that come out to my seminars. They're so interested.
What part of Michigan did you come to? Because it's not very pretty here.
You know what? I've gone everywhere from right up to the border of Canada all the way down to Detroit. You know, Wyandotte. I've been in Omaha.
That's where
there.
Bonnie lives.
That's Bonnie's
hometown. Is there a paranormal convention of any kind in Michigan this year?
Actually, there is one they're working on.
This year?
It's next year. It's next year, yeah.
But, you know, there's so much activity there. You'd be surprised. I mean, of course, you had the famous stuff that happened in Holland. Remember that a few years ago?
Oh, that was amazing. Well,
that was awesome. I mean, those were police officers that were seeing the things, you know?
Look what just happened with France. Didn't France open up their entire UFO file?
Yes, they did.
I mean, that's going to take years, isn't it, for people to absorb and
learn? Well, you know, the thing is, with France, what it really is, it's the files from their... Well, it's like the French NASA, okay? And with the French NASA, what they did was, whenever they came across a UFO sighting, they themselves wouldn't investigate. They'd send a group called Chapon, which is part of the French police force, out to go and investigate. Then they would return a report to the French astronomers. The astronomers would then look it over and make a decision, you know, what they felt happened or didn't happen. But, you know, one of my complaints was they never spoke to any of the witnesses. They merely... kind of comb through the police reports, which is fine, but that's not really, I mean, any investigator knows that's not how you do it, you know.
Well,
so it's not, you know what, it's not going to be as exciting as people think. That, you know what really got to me was the the British Ministry of Defense did the same thing. They just released all these files saying how they felt there was nothing to UFOs, and I laughed myself to death because back in the late 80s, I actually spoke to a person who worked in the Ministry of Defense. And I knew he worked there because I had a friend of mine that introduced me to him, and he said just the opposite. It's this versus that. It's the same old thing. Whenever a government releases anything, and you have to ask yourself this, you know, most governments do things in their own best interest. So where's the profit for them to release something that's going to, you know, take a secret, if indeed it was a positive report, you know, take a secret and release it to the public? Well, that is not going to happen. People always ask me, why would the government of the United States keep a secret? Well, it's in their best interest. You know what? They'll release the information when it's in their best interest because governments, you know, the number one aim of any government, I don't care which one it is or what kind it is survival of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently of the system of government. So they're going to release things when it's in their best interest.
Well, if there's anything I've learned from your work, Bill, and this is for real here, from all the reading and stuff that I've done as a result of being exposed to your work, that was the number one thing, and that's don't trust your government. I don't know any other way to say it.
Read what they said, and then read in between the lines, and then read what they didn't say, and then you've got to really analyze all this stuff.
Well, you know what? We have a wonderful system of government, and I'll tell you, I've been everywhere, okay? And I got to tell you, you know, there's probably no place I'd rather be than the United States in terms of the system of government, because at least you've got a chance.
Yeah.
You know, there are other places, like you go up to Canada. I love going up to Canada. Some of the nicest people I've ever met in the world. But you know what? They have control over the press. There's things you cannot write and things you cannot say. And I notice the difference, and that's sad. I mean, it's scary. I would do radio shows up there, and you guys aren't going to believe it, but they'd hand me a list of things I couldn't talk about.
Wow.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm like, she said, well, if you do, we're going to get fined or we're going to get shut down. I'm like, well, no, okay, I'm fine. But, you know, so I do like it. But you know what? What really went wrong was sometime around the turn of the century, we started building our intelligence services, and we built it similar to what the British do. And the British intelligence service basically has the idea that, you know, what they don't know won't hurt them, which is not always a good thing. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But you see, they start off from the point of don't tell anyone.
Right.
And that's not a good, you know, instead of saying, well, we can tell them about this, but not about that. They just say, you know what? The less they know, the better. And so because we've built it on that premise ever since, you know, now we've got a problem. You know, now how do they say, oh, yeah, by the way, we've been lying to you for about, 50 or 60 years. But, no big thing.
Yeah, now, well, that's what always astounds me. You know, and you're right, Bill. I never really thought about it in that light. Cause we talked about that particular article we saw about France releasing their records.
Right.
And we were both kind of like, U.S. government, why don't you guys do the same thing, right? That's kind of like what we were throwing around. But when you think about it, though, really, even if they were to, Doug and Bill and Bonnie, what would it really do? First of all, I don't trust them anyways. Okay, well, Scott, here's your birthday present for this year. We're going to release all of our UFO files. In all honesty now, I'd go, yeah, why are you doing it now?
Yeah.
What's going on? What is your reason? What is your
motive? What do you want? What do you need?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, one of the things that I think about, because we travel a lot, but we drive mostly, always. And
I'm with you guys. I hate flying.
Oh, we drive like crazy. When you're crossing over from one state into another, and then from that state into another one, and then from that state into another one, depending on how many times you have to cross over, into another state. It's so incredibly liberating to know that you didn't have to stop at a border
and have all your stuff checked and your car ripped apart.
Because this really is the United States of America.
Oh, yeah.
And you notice that when you travel. And I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah, we've said that over and over again here. I mean, I love my country. I love the U.S. I love being here. I love our way of life.
I love the fact that we can do this show.
Yeah, but sometimes they perturb me quite a bit.
Bonnie's
waving a flag.
What was that, Bill?
One of the things that really, upsets me is that and I think people sometimes don't understand this, but, I think that the government has a very small view of things for allegedly having such high connections with aliens and stuff. But, their attitude now, and of course people would have to understand this, I'm not using it as an excuse for them, but this goes a lot more than just, national borders and other countries. We're talking about other civilizations that may indeed be competing. So, it's almost like, of course, I don't know if you guys watch. One of my favorite shows has been Stargate over the years.
Oh, I love it.
Doug loves Stargate.
I'm
coming
Stargate
to an
fan.
End. Bummer, I mean,
I know.
So they can put on something else that's dumb. But anyway, it's a wonder. Oh, I'm sure. Well, of course, everybody's just waiting for the next Battlestar Galactica episode, right? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, flipping that's around her, I know a whole bunch of old actors who wouldn't have any work. But the point is, I love Stargate because there's so much truth in Stargate. It is just scary. But the point is this. When you have something like that, you begin to look differently, as in the series where, why are they keeping the secret? Well, because it goes beyond just governments here. If there's agreements with aliens and alien civilizations, that may play into it. However, it might have been a good idea to let people pick and choose. I think that some of the greatest scientists who ever have lived have not worked directly with the government. And so consequently, it might have been a good idea to give access to those people and see what they thought about the situation. Because if you've listened to the Phil Snyder material, then you know that it hasn't always gone so well.
Right.
There's been a lot of problems.
There have been some major bumps in the road.
Part of the reason why Phil was so beat up on him was a result of things
the bumps
like,
in the road.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hate to go back to Phil Snyder. I don't want to. The guy just blows me away.
Bill, one of the things you are very vocal about television and television shows.
Yeah.
You went through a series of articles where you were right, because you write a lot, you go through fits and spurts, but you write a lot. And one of the things was pretty much they were putting out these, what end up being fluff pieces, on UFOs and on hauntings. Now it's an onslaught. I mean, we really are living through an onslaught of television media on paranormal stuff. I mean, we've got the Haunted History Channel. We've got the Haunted Travel Channel. There are nights.
That's true.
Or weekends or whole days where everything, and there's the whole month of October, where everything is haunted.
Yeah, this isn't even our busy season.
And this isn't even our busy season, and we just went through a whole bunch of haunted. We've got got, and on court TV, we've got people running around, and we've got people running around like crazy with all this paranormal stuff. On the whole, I really like to see the good in it. I like to see that it's getting people thinking, talking.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting around the table. You know, their kid comes in from a bender and sits down. I'm never going to drink again. It's like, okay, let's watch, you know, Haunted History. And but it gets people talking, and that's the optimism that I have. My cup, I guess, is half full. But sometimes you don't see it that way.
Well, you know, my feeling is this. I agree with you. For example, you know, I've worked with a lot of fictional movies over the years. I've worked with Independence Day, and I've worked with Men in Black, both of them. I've worked with, all these different X-Files movies. I probably spent, I don't know, 7 months plugging that thing and, you know, was a consultant to it. Because you know what? I like the premise. I like that. I like to get people talking about these things. Here's the problem, okay? Some kid or some group of people or whoever, it doesn't have to be children, it could be somebody older, you know, they see something like Taps on television, okay? And that's fine. I mean, you know, everybody's got their own approach to investigation, they've got their own approach to research, and that's a good thing because it keeps diversity within the field. But, you know, if you're just going to go in, you know, like they do with these scare things where they put, like, cameras on everybody and, ooh, let's run around the old asylum and scare the crap out of each other. You know, because everybody gets it. Everybody gets it that these are numbskulls, you know, who basically scare their own shadow. Oh, I don't believe in that stuff. Meanwhile, they're like, you know, got somebody's book in their back pocket. They're scaring the daylights out of each other. We all get that it's just silly fun.
Yeah, we saw that on VH1.
You know, I mean, okay. And even with Taps, you know, I think everybody gets it. You know, they may often see something there that really is just a little much, you know. But you know what's bad? I've been on enough investigations where things get really serious really fast, and I'm sure you have too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something. It's not a place for rank amateurs, and it's not a place for playing games, because you can find yourself under severe mental attack. I mean, you know, some of the stuff I've seen has literally scared the daylights out of me. And I knew to step back. I mean, I always brought in people that were really good at what they did. I worked quite a bit with the Spiritualist Church and other people that, you know, they had some experience in this. Whenever I didn't have the experience, I got somebody that did. But just to think that you can walk into a haunted situation that's really haunted and just do what you want and say what you want, you know, it doesn't work that way. And sometimes it can do you an awful lot of damage. That's my concern. My concern is people causing themselves problems later that they're not willing to, you know, to take. I mean, I know more than a few people have got involved with this and spent years under psychiatric treatment afterwards simply because whatever they discovered went home with them. And that does happen. So consequently, you know, I guess my attitude is, okay, you know, if you want to do it as fun, you want to go scare somebody in the house, that's fine. But if you're going to walk into a real situation, and also you got to remember, what about the people there? You know, it's easy for somebody to walk in with a camera and say, oh, hi, you know, I'm the ghost hunter, and I came to take some pictures so I could make some money and get a paycheck, and hey, then I'm leaving, you know? And you got your problem stuck there. Tough luck, you know? If that's what paranormal investigation is, I don't want it. Because, you know, my attitude is if I'm going to go in there and they're going to invite me, I'm going to try and help these people. And that's what I always try and do. If I can't solve their problem, I'm going to at least try to get someone who can help them with it. So I just think that sometimes we get just a little bit I think people are just a little too free and loose with these shows about ghost investigation. I'm really concerned about them because, like I said, you know, after you've seen the real things a few times, it makes you worry.
I want to back you up with that because I have to say what happened to me recently, well, not recently, it was about 6 months ago, and I've just now been cleared to talk about this, But I do want to bring it up. We're going to be talking with John Zaffis. This happened with John Zaffis.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, I now know the difference. I'm not going to talk about the whole thing right here.
Yeah,
I'm going to give
cool.
a brief interview or brief description real quick. We ran into something that I know I was not prepared for. I know that the team that was there was not prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
We ran into this when we were ghost hunting with I was with John it was me, John Zaffis, and the folks from World of the Unexplained down in North Carolina. And
you've been holding this for 6 months.
It was the trip that you and I didn't go.
Yeah, no, we didn't. I didn't. Okay, I'm shutting up. All right, go ahead.
And we ran into something that I was not prepared for. The rest of the team was not prepared for. We were extremely fortunate that John Zaffis was there. John Zaffis, by the way, Bill, I don't know if you know. Do you know John Zaffis?
Yes, I do.
He's on TV.
I know of him, I should say. Yes. Very wonderful person.
He's going to be on 2020 next Friday, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
is that awesome?
Yeah. I have to tell you, he's been doing this since he was a teenager. Mm-hmm. He's been doing paranormal investigation since a teenager, and the years of experience showed themselves that night, because he was able to come in, take control. He was there, but he immediately, when this stuff was going down, he recognized what was happening. He took control of the situation and he shut the situation down. It was like that. He knew what to do. He did it, and I wouldn't have known what to do. I've seen true experience at work. And we're going to talk to him soon, I hope.
We are going to be talking to him.
We're
going to
bring him on the show because I want to tell the whole story.
Well, I just news to me, so.
will you bring him on the show?
I haven't heard this yet.
Okay.
No, we'll have to discuss this.
But I have to say, there is a difference between having years of experience or having been trained and having done this and having run into experiences before where you know exactly what's going on right away, you know exactly what to do. With the folks in you know, these, you know, I have to say, I too am an amateur paranormal investigator. I run around. I enjoy it. I enjoy the company of my friends. I enjoy looking into this stuff and analyzing the stuff and taking the photos and taking the EVPs and trying to get something and do all this stuff. I really enjoy it. I love it. Am I a trained and seasoned paranormal investigator? No. Mm-mm.
Either am I.
90% of it is reading. I'll be honest with you. And it's the same with your audience that really, you know, a lot of it is about having a database in your head so that when something happens, you know what to do. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of great books out there. There's a lot of good stuff. And you know what? There's just no shortcuts. I mean, by the time I started investigating, I'd read over 300 books on the paranormal. So I was semi-prepared simply because I'd read it, you know, read books by people that really knew what they were doing. And I think that that's what people need to do. They need to prepare themselves before they go out, you know, and really understand what they may have to deal with, because the paranormal is so diverse. There's so many different things. You know, we use the term ghost because we don't know what else to say. You know, it may be a ghost, it may be something else. But if you have the database in your head, at least you stand a chance of being able to deal with whatever hits you, you know, in your face.
Well, yeah, and that's the bottom line right there, too. I think a lot of people, while we say every week here, we're like, hey, you know what, we're really glad to see all these people getting involved with this stuff now and going out there and doing the work and things like that. But I mean, just a little while ago, we were talking about equipment and stuff like that with Dave Schumacher, and I said, hey, you know, a lot of people are going out there doing this work. It's really great, but I don't think they really even know how to use their equipment yet.
And they
may not even know. If they're armed with equipment, they're not armed with the right knowledge, they can be, like you just said, Bill, they can be in big trouble.
So let's
And you know what? The knowledge is the best equipment you can have, because I'll tell you, there's times when you'll be out there and electronics will fail you. I mean, it's happened to me on many occasions. Sometimes electronics will shock you. It'll go against you. It'll actually be used by whatever forces are there against you. So your best asset is your brain. And let me tell you, one of the reasons I write this article, I hate writing because it takes me like 2 weeks to write one article and really have it the way I want it. But I do it because I want people to understand, you know, I want them to be able to go to my website and read something that will help them, you know, should they come across this type of a situation, simply because I've got lots of experience. And I figure, you know what, if I can put it down in writing, maybe they can learn from it and maybe it'll help them. You know, I'm just trying to point people in the right direction. So that's, you know, if people wonder why I write, that's what I don't get paid for writing. You know, nobody gives me a check for doing it. I just do it because I really want to, I'm hoping to move the investigation of the paranormal forward into a more positive vein. And, you know, especially when it comes to things like ghosts and paranormal phenomenon that you're not familiar with. And you got to remember, you know, when you're out there, you're dealing with people. Some of these people have been very badly traumatized by all this. So it's not just about you. It's not about the phenomenon. It's also about the UFO or the paranormal witness, and that has to really be in the front of your mind when you're dealing with this stuff. You know, too often we tend to be, as investigators, tend to walk right past them and look for the ghost.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best route for the ghost is the witness.
And I have to say, I'm optimistic that the level of paranormal investigation in general, even of the folks who just get together and say, hey, I want to do a ghost hunting group, I think that the bar is raising. The bar is raising. I think people are becoming more educated. And not despite TV, but sometimes because of TV. Mm-hmm. I'm still optimistic, Bill. You know, we are at the end of the show.
This is the fastest show you've had in a long time.
I'm traumatized by that, so I'm going to have some, you know, some...
Don't call me screaming at 3 in the morning, freaking out.
We didn't ask this. We didn't ask that. Your websites, Bill. I have www.ufoguy.com.
Yeah, you can actually go there, and from there it can get to all the others. You know, we've got a new group called IPIS, which is the International Paranormal UFO Society, which people can check out as well. And, you know, you can get to that. You can get there from my website. I've got a free newsletter, too. You know, a lot of it's – there's an awful lot of free stuff. You can just basically come and check out everything. And we've always got some compelling, provocative stuff in our newsletter. So, you know, come on and visit. And I'm always adding new articles and things, you know, as I have time to write them. And, you know, hopefully people will enjoy them. And, of course, I'm always welcoming any feedback. And, of course, if you want to, you know, report your UFO or ghost or paranormal sighting, we've got a way to do that. We've got a form on the site. You know, I take confidentiality very seriously, so I'd be glad to talk to anybody that has something to report and hopefully be able to help them out.
Thank you so much,
Bill. Yeah,
Bill,
it's always an honor to have you on the show, and it's always a pleasure.
And you know what I'll talk about next time I come on?
What's that?
Because, you know, in about a year, I got a surprise for you guys.
Uh-oh.
Want a big surprise?
Yes.
Okay, there's going to be a major feature film coming out, and nobody knows about it yet. It's going to be about an old but good topic. Did you ever read the book, The Ghost of Flight 401?
No way.
Yep.
Oh,
and I got the goods. So next time I'm on, I'll talk about it.
We got to keep in contact, Bill. We need to hook up some down the road here. We do have to go, though, unfortunately.
We want to pump that up. We're stick with us,
stay
though,
with
Bill.
Us. Don't leave us yet, Bill.
Don't hang up yet.
Man.
Again, Bill Nell, www.ufo.
I should have booked 2 hours.
Yeah, I know.
I should have done 2 hours. I've been kicking myself all week because of that.
We need two. Next few shows, we need 2 hours with the Diamond Lady and 2 hours with Bill.
All right, we'll do an extended show.
We have to do a super duper show. Bill Nell, www.ufoguy.com, and canyoustandthetruth.com. I have to thank Bill. I have to thank Dr. Patty, Diamond Lady Diamond, www.diamondlady.net, and of course, our good friend David Schumacher
of the
Southern Wisconsin Paranormal Research Group. That's SWPRG.com. What an incredible, incredible night this has been.
Saith DeMaio. This was Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I am Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll see you guys next week.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. I listen to now. I need to go someplace where a man can think.
More accurate, balanced news coverage. Real people with real lives in your dramas and on your talk shows. And if we don't get it, we'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media, become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Don't hate the media, become the media.